This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pancava. For some of us, getting to work is a job in and of itself. If you live in an urbanized part of North Carolina, such as the Triangle or Triad or Charlotte, that commute seems to get longer every day. This hour, we're taking a look at what the future of transportation will be here in North Carolina. More road widenings? Mass transit? Well, the Triangle and Charlotte transit authorities are preparing to build light rail lines. And for those of us still in cars, will we ever be weaned from the gas tank? What of hybrids and alternative fuels? We welcome your calls this hour. Have you solved the commuter challenge? If you have, do share. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. That's 1-877-962-9862. With us this hour is Bruce Seisloff, who writes the Road Worrier column for the Raleigh News and Observer. He's here in the studio. Welcome, Bruce.
Thanks, Melinda. Good to be here.
Thanks for being with us. Well, you know, we're taking a look at what things are going to be like in the future. And I'm curious, as the road worrier, you write about problems and challenges now, but if you're still the road worrier 5 years from now, what do you think you're going to be worrying about?
Well, more of the same. Traffic, we can only expect it to get worse. The jobs are growing, population is growing, and traffic grows even faster than the numbers of residents here, because each year, each of us who's driving are doing more driving for different reasons that have to do with suburban sprawl and other things. And our ability to keep up with that, to accommodate it with road improvements and alternatives, can't keep pace. It's falling behind, and it's likely to fall behind more for reasons including how much money and time it takes to make these improvements.
Now, are we doing more driving because we are living farther and farther from our jobs, or is it that we're living perhaps even closer to our jobs, but there are more people out there that we're competing with when we're getting on the road in the morning?
A lot of people are living farther from their jobs. You hear of a lot of new residential developments farther out from the center of the triangle, with people driving, living farther out and driving farther in. And so the average number of miles that a triangle commuter goes to work each day, I think, grew from something like 20 miles in 1990 to 24 miles in the year 2000. That's a pattern that's hard to change, because it's a big part of our whole suburban layout that we have here.
So how do you solve that?
Well, there are, even though everybody is expecting traffic congestion to get worse, there are alternatives that are coming on the horizon, and each of which has some potential to be of some help. It might take a long time to see how helpful they'll be in slowing down the growth of traffic congestion. You know, mass transit improvements with the Triangle Transit Authority opening in a 28-mile train line from Durham to Raleigh by the end of 2008, and other things underway too. We'll probably at some point install a carpool lane on I-40 and the Durham Freeway with incentives for carpoolers and to allow buses to go faster than cars rather than slower.
Mm. Because right now it's a disincentive to take the bus if the bus is going slower.
It often is, yeah. And telecommuting is growing considerably thanks to some technological improvements that employers are getting into. And then there are steps underway to make our roads work better with the existing amount of pavement we have to handle more traffic more smoothly. The city of Raleigh will get an improved computerized traffic signal system, for example, that'll show everybody more green lights than they see now and fewer red lights. You'll spend less time waiting at a red light. Your trip across town will be a few minutes faster, and the streets will be able to carry more cars per hour traffic signals.
Yeah, how would the more green lights work? Because I'm almost thinking about all the children are above average, because it's green in one direction, it's red in the other.
Well, one way to think about it is we all spend a lot of time idling at red lights that we know ought to be green. You know, in the middle of the night, some stupid intersection that makes you wait for no good reason. Other roads are better than others. It's synchronizing signals so that it'll turn green before you get there. And Raleigh's system isn't by any means the worst that there is. It's just needs a good upgrade to do a lot of that faster and smarter. Mm-hmm. And they have high hopes for getting good value out of that money.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Bruce Seisloff, who is the Road Worrier columnist for the Raleigh News and Observer. If you want to join the conversation, we're talking about the future of transportation in North Carolina. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. We'll go to Greenville. Don is with us. Hi there, Don.
Hi. I've been wondering why, when I go to work in the morning, my side of the road is busy and the other side's empty, and in the evening, the same holds true. Why does urban planning result in all the traffic going the same direction at the same time and only half of the roads being used?
Bruce Seisloff?
Gosh, I happen to have the opposite experience because I live in Chapel Hill and work in Raleigh, and Raleigh's a bigger employment center than Chapel Hill, and I have the relative good fortune of driving against the heavy traffic both times a day. I know the urban planning is an issue in the problem that you're seeing there, and one of the things that folks are trying to address that with is developing more urban and more dense and mixed-use communities in the area in the next 10 or so years. We have some that are starting now so that people will live closer to where they work. For example, a good example is a lot of people that work in Research Triangle Park have had limited opportunity to live anywhere near RTP until just recently, or relatively speaking anyway. And now there are a lot of higher density residential communities building up right around the park, and some are going to be actually slightly inside the park. Things like that will give people the opportunity to shorten those commutes. But that general question of how uneven it is, I guess, just has a lot to do with, you know, that time of day traffic flow. And there's more people living at one end and working at the other end.
Right. I wonder, Don, if you're still with us, would you consider moving to a place that was either closer or that went against the traffic flow?
Well, it's whether I'd move or not, that's a major consideration. But it just seems like functions are centralized, and people have to travel to the functions. You know, the large medical facilities, they have to be centralized. But do employers all have to be downtown? And do stores all have to be downtown? And that sort of thing. Schools all have to be bunched around.
Well, some people might say the answer to that would be to sprawl it out, and that has led us to some of the situation we have now, where it is spread out. It's not all of the business is in downtown Raleigh, but is in edge cities and places like RTP.
Yeah, I hear urban sprawl spoken in a bad tone, but if you don't have sprawl, then you go vertical or you go dense.
Okay, Don. Well, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
1-877-962-9862. Getting dense, is that part of the solution?
Getting dense is, some people think it's part of the solution. A lot of people are appalled at the idea, just as he suggested that he was. There are plans underway to allow much more dense development right around the rail line that's going to be opening in a few years. And the numbers of people that would be allowed to live on an acre are higher around the 9th Street station in West Durham than the city of Durham would have allowed otherwise, and around the other stations in Raleigh.
This is for the commuter rail.
For the commuter rail line, yes. And the idea that, as happens in other parts of the country, when you put in mass transit, it helps guide density of development. And the idea is to encourage more growth, more people living vertically even, right around the transit lines and the people that otherwise would be sprawled out across the county. There are plans for the Triangle Metro Center, a development around there that would have thousands of residential units and in some buildings as much as 6 or 7 stories high.
And this would be in downtown Raleigh?
The Triangle Metro Center, I'm sorry, is on the edge of Research Triangle Park.
Okay.
It'll be near one of the main rail stops there.
Okay. We go to Bob in Raleigh. Bob, I understand you're a realtor.
I am. I do both real estate sales and appraisal work, so I don't have much of a choice except to spend it in a car. But I try a number of ways to reduce my time on the road, and that is do things by fax and by email. I drive a 92 Honda Civic, which gets probably almost as good mileage as some of the new hybrids, so I'm not inclined to buy one until the hybrids improve a little bit more. But I try to ride my bicycle, and I've had a couple of listings in my subdivision, and when someone says they want to see the house, I ride over on my bike. And, of course, there's usually a look of surprise on their face, one, because I'm not driving a car, and they're usually looking for the car, the agent who's going to show the house.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things we need in this town desperately is make it easier to ride a bicycle to different places. You take your life in your hands if you have to go anywhere, and I'd ride it a lot more if there were some dedicated bike paths and things were just a little more safe.
I'm curious on another aspect, too, of your work, Bob. Do you find that people you're showing homes to who might be moving to the area from away, do they take their commute time into consideration when they're looking for a house? How high a priority is that?
People do tend to look for a place to live that's convenient in terms of access to roadways. It's it's not always being real close to where you work, but it's, for example, if you're off Capitol Boulevard somewhere near 540, and you can get on 540 and get to Durham in 30 minutes or so, then that's important. So it's time traveled, not always just the distance.
Okay.
Bike lanes is one of those alternatives that's being improved at a pretty slow pace, but there are signs of progress in several areas. Dick Sloan, who commutes from South Durham to NIEHS, told me that he noticed bike lanes being added to Cornwallis Road, which he said would make it a lot easier for a number of Durham residents to commute to RTP without feeling like they're taking their lives in their hands, at least on every stretch of the road. There's a new Greenway bridge being built over the Raleigh Beltline that's just going to be for pedestrians and cyclists, and that'll mean for the first time you can ride your bike from inside the Beltline to someplace outside the Beltline, and even eventually as far away as Durham.
Right. We are talking today about the future of transportation in North Carolina. With us is Bruce Seisloff, who writes the Road Warrior column for the Raleigh News and Observer. If you want to join the conversation, our number is 1-877-962-9862. In just a moment, we'll get more into that issue of mass transit and the Triangle Transit Authority, which is getting underway this year to build that rail line between the two cities of Raleigh and Durham and through RTP. All of that coming up in just a moment on the State of Things. Support for the State of Things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the listeners who support WUNC. This is the State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. Ground will be broken on two light rail projects in North Carolina this year, in Charlotte and in the Triangle. Total cost for these two systems is expected to be over $800 million by the year 2014. Now, proponents hope that these mass transit systems will help ease congestion. Opponents say that commuters will just not give up their cars. That's just one of the topics we're talking about today as we look at the future of transportation here in North Carolina. With us is Bruce Seisloff. He writes the Road Warrior column for the Raleigh News and Observer. We are taking your calls as well. The number is 1-877-962-9862. And joining us right now is someone who knows the roads intimately as well. Richard Frank commutes from Chapel Hill to Research Triangle Park every day for his work. Back in the mid-90s, he served on the Chapel Hill Town Council and was chair of the Chapel Hill Transportation Advisory Board. And Richard Frank is on the phone right now. Hi there. Thanks for being with us today.
Hello, Melinda.
Hi. Well, you've been so very involved with mass transportation issues in the Triangle area, but I understand that you drive to work now. You don't take mass transit.
That's true.
And why is that?
When we moved a few years ago, it became a lot less convenient to ride the DTA bus to the Research Triangle Park, and the other reason is that I have a daughter in daycare, and taking mass transit and having childcare responsibilities are oftentimes not very compatible. My wife and I are considering moving, and access to transit is one of the factors we're looking at in terms of deciding where to move to.
Right. You know, it's been about 10 years since you first got involved in local transportation issues. Have things changed as much as you expected them to in that time?
Things have changed, certainly not as much. The Triangle Transit Authority, for one, has been met with difficulty after difficulty in getting the commuter rail project off the ground. I suppose they knew going in that it was going to be a long process, but I think it's easy for many people to get discouraged when the process drags on for more than 10 years before construction has even started.
So how would you were taking the bus for a while, but then you moved someplace where the bus wasn't convenient. How will having rail make things different for you?
Well, the first reason is simply that rail is generally faster than a bus. It doesn't compete with cars. The second, and probably in the long-term bigger reason, is that having a rail system in place changes development patterns. It creates an incentive for more housing, more dense housing to be created around rail stations. And the rail being more permanent, people are more incented to move to locate near a rail station and consider that as a high priority factor in deciding where to live. You never know when the bus route might get changed, and where you thought you had good access to a bus, you no longer do.
Mm-hmm. Has your philosophy about transportation changed?
I suppose it has. I suppose when I started doing this 10 years ago and the growth in the Triangle was maybe a little lower on the acceleration curve, I thought we could really shape the way the Triangle develops and do grow in such a way that we were making decisions that took transportation into consideration. I think I probably no longer think that that's the case. I think we have to make the best with what's on the ground and with the kind of development that we are likely to get based on market forces. And so that means a lot of different things. It means we have to have good local access to get people closer to the train station by a bus or by bike lanes or whatever that takes. I think it means we need employers to take a stronger role in moving people around from the train station to their place of business in Research Triangle Park, for example.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I wonder if you think that the Triangle area, could it work here? Do we have the density that we need?
I think it will work here, but we have to be careful about how we define work. Is the train line opening going to reduce congestion on our highways? Probably not. The background rate of growth is more than what the carrying capacity of the rail line is going to be. For me, I would define will it work as do we give people options? Are we giving someone the option of riding a train and working on, you know, a laptop computer on their way to work as opposed to sitting in traffic where they're, you know, less able to do other tasks? Are we giving people who either for economic reasons or medical reasons can't drive an option about getting to work and thus opening up more employment opportunities for them?
And a moment ago you mentioned that years ago you thought it was a time that, you know, that you had hoped that the region might get its act together on mass transit then. I wonder if that was a case of missed opportunity or the need just wasn't seen then. I mean, do we almost have to have people dealing with commuter stress of saying there has to be another way? Do we almost have to come to that point?
I think it was a matter of competing priorities. There were plenty of people who thought that transportation was a high priority back then, but perhaps not a majority. And so when it comes to doing things like building long-range land use plans and making decisions about how to spend transportation funding, those are things that really require consensus and a majority, which perhaps is more difficult to form until you have, you know, really serious problems on the ground and people spending hours in traffic jams.
Mm-hmm. Bruce Seisloff, you've heard these arguments before?
Oh, yeah, and a lot of that rings true, I think, for a lot of people in different ways. You know, people's decisions about whether they're going to use a train or a bus, and the bigger question about how many people are going to ride the train or the bus is a combination of all these individual decisions. And if you've got a daycare on the way to work, that makes it a lot harder for you to ride the train or the bus. Talking about the shifting in priorities, that takes a big societal shift, and we're seeing that, I think, gradually, both at the state and the local level, starting to talk more about transit as a priority and to get a larger share of limited transportation spending. The Triangle is a few years behind the Charlotte area in that sense, in that Charlotte folks a few years ago developed a long-range transit plan and agreed to tax themselves to pay for it, to put in not just this one line that's going to start this year, but a whole a variety of train and express bus lines to change Charlotte's transportation system and to take care or to try to address its really terrible traffic congestion problems. They're a lot worse off than we are. Mm-hmm. It's harder. One reason it's been harder, I think, in the Triangle is that we're not a single urban area, but a handful of municipalities, and not as urban as Charlotte, and even in Wake County, most people in the county don't live in its biggest city in Raleigh. So there are a lot of jurisdictions and a lot of spread out ideas and different ideas, and it's harder to develop a consensus. Mm-hmm. In the General Assembly, that's hard too. The State Department of Transportation has a new long range transportation plan to set priorities and to allocate what share of money goes to different transportation uses. And they're talking about cutting back on the money for new highways and spending more on transit. They'll still need to get continuing support from the legislature as they go along on that, and that'll be a challenge for them.
We are talking today about the future of transportation in North Carolina. At the moment, we're talking about mass transit, which is something that Charlotte area and the Triangle area are getting more deeply into this year, breaking ground on new transit systems, train systems, commuter train systems that would connect large parts of those urban areas. And we welcome your calls. The number is 1-877-962-9862. Now, at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C., the Metropolitan Policy Program has been researching this issue of mass transit across the country. One of those involved with that is Rob Puentes, who is a Brookings Fellow. He joins us now from his office in Washington. Welcome to the State of Things, Rob Puentes.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hi. Well, what is the challenge in making mass transit work in a place like North Carolina's Triangle or Charlotte?
What makes it work is was reflected, I think, in a lot of the comments that were made previously. We have to think about things like land use. It really is one of the primary criteria that goes into deciding whether or not transit is going to be efficient, effective, convenient. You know, transit is much more than just moving people from one place to another. Transit is really becoming more and more an integral part of the fabric of cities and metropolitan areas, as much as anything else is. So, you know, if transit is just looked at as something that is designed to get people from one place to another, it's probably not going to be very effective. It really has to be looked at holistically in the broader range of issues about land use, about what kind of segment of the population is designed to serve, how it's going to do that, and what role that is in shaping overall metropolitan growth.
So obviously you're not going to have a train stop that's going to stop next to a cow field that will stay a cow field for much longer. The idea being that you want to build a little community around that, like you're talking about having retail and perhaps apartments or more dense housing around those stops.
Sure, that's one thing. It probably should be something more than just a little town center, which is, I think, how many metropolitan areas and many places are looking now. I think it was mentioned before that one of your callers complained about what he thinks is the evils of density that he sees coming down the pipe. And that's, you know, it's a real fear. It's something that local officials and folks have to respond to and have to be ready for, because people may not want there to be increased densities and all the perceived ills of increased congestion and loss of open space and these issues. Mm. You know, however, if you're going to run an efficient transit system, you can't design these stations, like you said, in the middle of a cow pasture. You can't surround them with 3,500 parking spaces and expect to make a dent in regional air quality, in regional traffic congestion, in regional economic competitiveness. You have to really use transit very differently and use it as a way to enhance metropolitan areas, to spur the kind of development that a community may want, and use it in a way that, again, is more than just about moving people, but really weaves it into the fabric of a place.
But what about, I guess, some of the proponents of having mass transit would say, well, this is a way to get people out of their cars. And, you know, sure enough, not everybody's going to live right next to the mass transit station, so they're going to have to drive their cars to the mass transit station, and you might well need a parking lot that holds 3,500 cars.
Indeed, but then you're not going to achieve some of the other objectives that we mentioned. Certainly some people are going to drive, and if you do put a rail system in a place, you know, it's going to be a slow transition. You're not going to have the developments not going to occur overnight. In many places, if the market's hot enough, it will come quickly, but it won't come fast enough where the system may be an immediate success. So, sure, there is going to be a slow transition, but again, it really depends on what you want to do. I know we referred to the system there in your metropolitan area as a commuter system. You know, and if that's what what you want to do is just provide a rail system for getting people to and from work, you know, that's one thing. If you want to build a rail system that's going to make a dent in some of these bigger issues and become something that folks can use to go shopping, to go other places, and actually reduce overall automobile trips, you know, then you have to think very differently about how the metropolitan area is growing.
Bruce, I want to bring Bruce Seisloff into the conversation. We're talking with Rob Puentes, who's with the Brookings Institution in its Metropolitan Policy Program. Richard Frank is with us as well. He was once chair of Chapel Hill's Transportation Advisory Board, and Bruce Seisloff writes about traffic and transit issues for the Raleigh News and Observer. The Triangle area, in your view, in what you've covered over mm-hmm. the years, is it a case of where we're trying to deal with a commuter problem and trying to address the backups that commuters run into on the roads, and that's what we're at going after primarily.
That certainly has been the emphasis of the concern, and it's perceived as the biggest source of the traffic problem. The plans for the rail line, I think, and also for not just the park and ride lots that'll serve it, but also new bus routes that will complement the rail line, are, I think, taken into consideration shopping trips and other kinds of journeys too, and say for example the growing entertainment areas in downtown Raleigh and downtown Durham, it is primarily for commuters. That's the way it's been thought of. I don't know what the figures are about what percentage of traffic they expect will be computers, but I would think the majority.
Well, nationally, we know that if I may, only 1/5 of all trips are commuter trips.
Oh.
So again, these are national figures. But
and are we talking about getting in the car or getting on the train there, or are we just talking about getting on the train for 1/5?
I'm sorry, getting to and from work.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Those trips make up about 1/5 of all of all trips that are taken.
Mm-hmm.
We know that, as was mentioned, daycare, all these other trips are coming up more during the day, shopping trips, these kinds of things. So addressing congestion on the commuter routes is certainly important because of the the rush hour phenomenon. But the commuter trips are only one small slice of overall trips.
Now, Rob Puentes, the North Carolina urban areas, Charlotte and the Triangle area, they have become more urbanized over the past few decades, but perhaps don't have quite the density in place that some would say is needed in order to make mass transit work. And I'm wondering if you know of other places in the country that would be akin to the Triangle and whether they have made it work there?
The density probably is not there now. That may be true. And it's important because in order to receive the federal funding that is required for so many of these systems, having transit supportive land use in place is one of the very very key criteria that the federal government uses to decide who gets these transit monies, which is why there's this enormous competition for some of these funds. So in order to even get involved in the federal process, you do have to have these kinds of things in place. And the federal government has pointed out that the communities around the metropolitan area in Cary, Raleigh, and in Durham, that they do have some of these new zoning tools in place in order to encourage some of this density. They look at other places like Denver, like Salt Lake City, some places in Texas, Houston, who you never would think of transit as working in some of these other places. Is beginning to take hold, not because they're necessarily reshaping the density of the metropolitan area, but they're making it work around these nodes, and they're doing what they can. It's it's a slow process, and it doesn't happen overnight, but there are a lot of good examples that the Triangle area can look to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go to the phones now. Bill joins us from Rocky Mount. Hi there, Bill.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome to the program. Did you have a question for our guests?
Yes, I do. I guess my question has to do with that 80% that's non-commuter. I have an office in Rocky Mount. My wife has an office in Burlington. We have houses in both places. Every time we go to the Raleigh-Durham airport, we have to pack up the car, fight the traffic, and go and park up on the 6th or 7th level of this big monstrosity in the middle of the airport. When are we going to have rail service into the airport?
Bruce Seislaw?
That's a popular question. The first stage of the Triangle Transit Authority rail line does not include a link to the airport. They're trying to work out the details for the second phase of TTA mass transit, which could be rail, or parts of it could be rail, or could be express bus lanes that would allow for fast buses that dodge traffic to include service to the airport. But that hasn't been nailed down yet. One reason they said that they opted against including airport service in the initial phase, even though everybody agrees sort of instinctively that it seems like a natural top priority, had to do with economics, and that to extend that rail service would have been very expensive compared to the expected traffic it would generate. It had to do partly with the luck of where existing railroad rights-of-way existed to make it economically feasible and practically feasible for them to start off in the rail service. And it also had to do with studies that said that even though lots of folks would like to have the option of easy rail service to and from the airport, that it didn't add up to as high numbers on a daily basis of expected use, and that's why they said they didn't include it in the first phase.
Mm-hmm. And finally, before we go to our break, Rob Puentes, is there any advice you could offer an area like the Triangle or Charlotte right now?
Patience is one, as Rich was mentioning. It is a long process. It's ultra-competitive, so it does take some time. What some folks are doing in very fast-growing metropolitan areas like Raleigh is a regional visioning exercise where they're pulling together local officials, business leaders, other civic individuals, and putting folks from the larger region together in the same room, presenting them with projections for growth and what's expected over the next two or three decades. And really having them kind of hammer out, well, what do we want the metropolitan area to look like then? How do we want it to grow, assuming it's going to grow? And we know that it is in your case. So as transit fits into that, then what role then does the transit system play? Can it be something more than just moving commuters back and forth? Can it be something else that really does revitalize a corridor or reshape a metropolitan area or redirect growth from the fringe back in? So these visioning exercises don't necessarily have policy triggers at the end, but they do help people think differently about how the place is growing.
Okay. Well, we'd like to thank you for being with us today. Rob Puentes is a fellow at the Metropolitan Policy Program at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C. And thanks also to Richard Frank, a commuter and Chapel Hill resident who was at one time chair of the Chapel Hill Transportation Advisory Board. And Richard Frank, we understand you're hoping for to find a house closer to the rail when it comes into play, right?
I sure hope so.
Okay. Thank you so much. We continue our conversation with Bruce Seisloff with the Raleigh News and Observer Road Warrior column. And get to more of your calls, 1-877-962-9862. All that ahead on The State of Things. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Penkava. Today we're talking about the future of transportation in North Carolina. Joining us in the studio is Bruce Seisloff, who writes the Road Warrior column for the Raleigh News and Observer. And we're taking your calls. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. That's 1-877-962-9862 if you want to join the conversation. We've been talking about the future of transportation in the state, and joining us right now is Len Sanderson, who is the State Highway Administrator for the North Carolina Department of Transportation. Thanks for being with us today, Len Sanderson.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Hi. Well, if you've been hearing our conversation, we've been talking not just about being in our cars, but about the advent of a commuter rail coming to the Triangle area and Charlotte in a few years. Does DOT makes road building a higher priority than, say, rail transport?
I think our Board of Transportation recently approved the statewide transportation plan, which looks ahead for the next 25 years. And they not only in this statewide transportation plan emphasized the highways and the needs for highways, but also public transportation, rail, and ferries. And it's a very, very important document and a look ahead into the future. And one of the things that we see is that the needs for all of our transportation needs is about $84 billion. And whereas the funding at the current funding levels for the next 25 years is $55 billion, which is quite a shortfall. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that we looked at, and not only looking at the highways, but as I said, public transportation and the other modes of transportation, is trying to place more emphasis on maintenance and preservation and trying to modernize the existing highway system that we have. At least that's what the recommended investment scenario is.
What does DOT do when an area of highway becomes congested, not say just the interstates, but state highways? How do you decide which area deserves attention and money for improving that road so it's not as congested?
In terms of the monies that we have available to us, the money is apportioned statewide, and that is set by our legislature, much of the money in terms of trying to create equity through an equity formula across the state, such that the urban areas get a share of that money and the obviously the eastern part of our state, and the mountains get a share of that money. But one of the very biggest challenges that we have is the limited amount of money that we have available, and the needs, as I've already talked about. There's certainly our needs outstrip the amount of money that we have available to us.
Okay, well, let's go to the phones now. Billy is in Washington. Hi there, Billy.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to the program. Did you have a question for our guests?
Yes, I'd like to ask why there's been no consideration to using some of this tax money that's being used to entice industry to come into the Triangle and other urban areas, use some of that to improve infrastructure, roads, schools, in places like the East and other low or underemployed areas, so that the strain on the fully employed areas by new labor coming in would be lessened. It's unbelievable that Highway 17 and Highway 264, two major heavily traveled highways, at that intersection in Washington, North Carolina, cars have to back up so a truck can turn. That's the state of transportation in the East.
Well, I'd like to ask Len Sanderson and then Bruce Seisloff to comment on that. Len Sanderson?
Yes, there are needs all over the state, as the callers talked about, and certainly down east. We spend each year about $2.2 billion in our maintenance and construction across the state. And I think the area that the gentleman identified, U.S. 70, U.S. 264, is part of our transportation improvement program. I know that as part of our plan is to construct what we call the Washington Bypass, which is a major investment, highway investment that we have that will be coming in the next several years that will help to address the congestion, the traffic flow, and the safety in that particular area of the state. But as I said, we have $2.2 billion that we currently are spending on our maintenance of the roads and construction. And that's one example, and there's examples from the mountains to the coast of where we're making major investments in the existing transportation system. Mm-hmm.
I'd like to ask Bruce Seisloff, do we have an efficient system for funding roads in North Carolina?
I don't know. I don't think I can evaluate that, to tell you the truth. I could certainly say that a lot of people share the skepticism that was I inferred from the caller about the emphasis on giving tax breaks to big industries, that, you know, new employers, such as the recent deal with Dell Computers, and the wisdom about spending money or declining to collect money that way versus spending money for more money for broader improvements in schools and roads is a perennial issue. And I don't think there's an easy answer to which way is right when you've got limited money to decide to spend this way or that way.
Okay. We'd go to John now in Raleigh. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. I just have two quick questions about the interstate highway system that's around Raleigh. First, I was curious to know whether the I-540 Beltline will ever go all the way around Raleigh, and if so, whether the inner and outer Beltline directions on the 440 highway will have to be renamed to avoid confusing everyone.
The inner Beltline?
Yeah, the inner and the outer, whatever. But yeah. I also want to know quickly if there are any plans to make it easier to get to other places in the Carolinas from Raleigh. For instance, I found it sort of hard to get on I-95 North to get to any of the northern beaches or to Charlotte without having to loop around through Greensboro.
Okay. Len Sanderson?
Okay. The first question is that the I-540 around the city of Raleigh and the Wake County area, I think one day, yes, I think the plans are for it to create a loop around the city. Currently, I-540 is under construction on the northeast-east side of the city from U.S. 1 around to the new U.S. 64 called the Knightdale Bypass, and should be complete probably a year and a half from now. And on the west side of the city, from in the Research Triangle Park, from I-40 southward down to NC-55 is under construction at this time. and should be complete in a year and a half to 2 years. And that will create probably 55 to 60% of that loop, which is a fairly major part of the circle around the city. The second part of that question is about the Raleigh Beltline as we know it and what is considered the inner loop and the outer loop, which is really referring to the lanes. And it is something, as the caller mentioned, that can be confusing. And it is something that we as DOT will need to take a look at to see if we would need to change that wording or remove that such that there is not confusing about the outer loop and the inner and outer lanes of the Raleigh Beltline.
Perhaps you can have a contest to rename it so people can while away the time in the coming years while it's getting ready to be built, you know?
There has been a lot of conversation about that terminology, yes.
Okay. Well, Len Sanderson, I want to thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Len Sanderson is State Highway Administrator from the North Carolina Department of Transportation. We are talking about the future of transportation in the state. As we've been saying, as the population in North Carolina has risen, so has the traffic and air pollution in the state. Now, some see alternative fuel as a solution to the state's pollution problem, see it more of a solution than, say, bus systems. Lyle Estill is Vice President of STUF for Piedmont Biofuels, and he powers his pickup truck with biodiesel. Welcome back to the State of Things, Lyle Estill.
Thanks, Melinda.
Hi. Well, biodiesel, we should explain, is a combination of diesel and oils that people might be left over from restaurants, for instance.
Right? That's right. It's a fuel that is made from fat. So any sort of fat can be turned into biodiesel. But also, I'd like to back up a sec and say that it's not like alternative fuels are an alternative to the bus. You know, we need the railroads, we need the buses, and light rail, et cetera. The fact is, it doesn't matter what you're driving on, we can't pave our way out of this transportation mess.
Mm-hmm. Now, your pitch is that the biodiesel, though, is better for the air that we breathe.
It certainly is, yes, it certainly is. From my perspective, if they're going to drop $800 million on a light rail system, that's a bargain, because what they haven't factored into that dollar amount or the shortfall that Len was mentioning is our air quality. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that as long as our cars and trucks sit in first gear on 40, our air quality is going south, so to speak, and as our air quality goes south, our local economy is being crushed with it. Mm-hmm. So if you want no emissions, you need to walk.
No, but as when it comes to biodiesel,
yes.
When we're trying to take a look ahead to say what things are going to be like in 5 or 10 years. In 10 years from now, what do you envision, realistically speaking? Will there be biodiesel stations in many towns, at every street corner? I mean,
yes, I think so.
Pragmatically speaking.
Oh, I think so, absolutely. I think that biodiesel will find its way into our energy mix and into our fuel mix. We already have several stations in the Triangle pumping a 20% blend. We have a couple of locations in the Triangle where you can get 100% biodiesel. And I would say if you give us 5 years, yes, we'll have biodiesel on street corners throughout the Triangle. It will be readily accessible, too.
No, when we talked before, you mentioned that you were getting some of the fuel, some of the fat from what was left over in restaurants after they finished, for instance, making French fries. Is that where this biodiesel is going to come from in the future? Because there is just a finite number of restaurants. Or is there going to be synthetic production of this oil?
Well, you know, we can work with any fat. So algae or beef tallow or, insect larvae, you name it, we can make fuel out of it.
Is there a lot of fat in insect larvae?
There can be, depending on what the insect is eating. That's correct.
Okay.
You know, Larry Shirley, the director of the State Energy Office, referred to North Carolina as the Saudi Arabia of biomass, and I think he's on to that. We have lots and lots of fat in North Carolina to derive our feedstocks from.
Okay. Now, the cost of this right now, how much is it a gallon?
$3.50 is what we're selling our B100 for.
So bringing the price down would seem to be a part of the plan for having it more widely used?
Well, it depends. You either bring our price down or perhaps the petroleum price will edge up, as we've seen. Yeah. When we started on this project, petroleum was at $1.69 petroleum diesel was up to 2.25 last summer, and my guess is petroleum is going to continue to climb.
Now, the gas I put in my car this morning for my commute was $1.75 a gallon, and that was gasoline, and we've been talking about biodiesel here. So I'm curious, what about, and most people's cars are fueled by gasoline, how about biogasoline? Is that...
Well, you'd be getting into the ethanol space. Now you can you can do some blending with ethanol and run unleaded vehicles on ethanol, which is really not my specialty. In the United States, about half of our fuel is diesel. And you are right, the passenger car isn't where most of it gets burned, but there's about 60 billion gallons of unleaded and 60 billion gallons of diesel burned in this country every year. Mm-hmm. Most of the diesel is in trucks and ships and trains and so on.
Okay. Well, Lyle Estill, thanks for talking with us once again.
You're welcome.
Lyle Estill is Vice President of Stuff for Piedmont Biofuels in Pittsburgh. We're talking about the future of transportation in North Carolina, and with us is Bruce Seisloff, the Road Warrior columnist for the Raleigh News and Observer. Let's go to one more call right now. We have Steve in Cary. Hi there, Steve.
Hi there. Hi. Melinda, how are you?
Fine. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm actually on Highway 40 heading to Wilmington right now, which I do on a very regular basis. But I grew up in the New York metropolitan area for half my life, and it was very common for me to commute into the city and use the transportation system rather extensively. And just as a point of reference, there were a number of train stations that actually had parking lots around the train stations that commuted into the city. But the thing that I've noticed most, and this is why I was calling, was, and this is not anything negative against North Carolinians, but I just get the impression that we have a fixation with our vehicles here in North Carolina, and I seriously doubt, until the mindset has changed, how people are really going to accept mass transit, a light rail system, because they just, you know, they're going to get in their car and drive to the train station, or they're going to get in their car and drive wherever they need to go. And it's going to take a long time for that to change people's minds about mass transit.
Well, I'd like to put that to Bruce Seisloff. Bruce, is it a case of there's not the alternative to the car in North Carolina?
Well, it's both, but there are a lot of people indeed that have that strong affinity for their cars and deep skepticism that the idea that anything else will ever take its place. A lot of people who say, you know, we'll never ride the trains, it's a terrible, stupid, absurd idea, are, you know, they say they can't imagine getting anywhere except by driving themselves, and it'll take a while before you know, big numbers of people change their minds, and it's hard to know how many will and what it'll take. Maybe it'll take, you know, a 4-hour drive between Raleigh and Durham.
Maybe. Necessity being the mother of perhaps persuasion.
Yeah.
Now, just before we go, transportation has always lent itself to very futuristic thinking, whether it's jetpacks or Star Trek, you know, teletransportation with a quick hit of your chest, you get transported somewhere else. And I'm wondering, practically speaking, in the next decade, is there any breakthrough that you envision that may come about that could be seen as very futuristic right now?
Well, gee, a lot of the work that's being done to improve our transportation systems is technology-based, and they call it intelligent transportation systems. It includes everything from synchronizing the traffic lights, which can be pretty impressive in itself if they can really deliver that much improvement that they talk about. But it also includes technology that would be installed in individual cars that is coming along to make it easier for you to, you know, if you're driving down the highway and the car in front of you slows down and it takes a moment for you to react, and maybe you hit the brakes too soon or too late, and maybe one person slowing down backs up a lot of traffic on the interstate, that this technology called it's braking assist, I forget the name of it, but it has to do with allowing cars like that to stay closer together, and it's smarter at braking than you are, and with the result of being able to handle more cars in each mile.
And I'm afraid we have to break right there for today, but Bruce Seisloff, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you. I enjoyed it.
Bruce Seisloff is the Road Warrior columnist for the Raleigh News and Observer, and that's it for the State of Things today. Support for the State of Things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Melinda Pencava.